Morning and welcome everyone to week, it's week six, right? It's my week five, but it's week six. I thought I was okay yesterday when I got off the plane, but I'm a little bit, anyway, I hope I make sense today. Should be okay, once we get into it. So far in the first weeks, we've been working on developing the whole concept of gratitude, developing a mindset, a consciousness of gratitude. Then last time, I think 2 weeks ago, we went through the various strategies to achieve gratitude. We talked about starting the day with gratitude, blessings, the idea of blessings, not taking things for granted, the idea of a gratitude journal, actually writing down the things that we are grateful for, and the whole concept of expressing gratitude, the idea of making sure to actually express gratitude for other people, because it makes us more positive, it makes us feel grateful more than if we don't express it. And I suppose in summary, what we've tried to achieve till now is to build this whole idea of seeing the positive, of being able to see that which is good, even when there's bad, even when there's dark, to see the light, even when there's challenges, to see the opportunity, right? And to look for the good, to build that mindset, to look for that which is positive and look for that which is good. Now, before we do today's topic, which I wanted to sort of shift a bit and look at it from a different perspective, I wanted to share two things with you. First of all, on the idea of the ability to see good, right? This ability to notice positive requires a certain mindset. And I was just thinking yesterday and today, I mentioned this idea, I think, towards the beginning, but just to develop it a bit more, there's a special blessing. One of the blessings of gratitude is called the blessing of Hagomel. And Hagomel is a blessing which today we make. In fact, I made it this morning because when I went to shul, I went to synagogue this morning, I made this blessing when they read the Torah, because when you come from an overseas trip, it's one of the times you make this blessing. Because this blessing is a substitute for a sacrifice that was brought in temple times, which is called the Thanksgiving sacrifice, which we don't bring today because we don't have a temple. And instead, today we make this blessing, and it's called Hagomel. What is this blessing, and when do you make it? So first of all, the language of the blessing is interesting. The language of the blessing is, we bless God, Hagomel l'chayavim tomor. We bless God for bestowing good things upon those that are unworthy. Okay. That's an interesting phrase. What do you mean upon those that are unworthy? In other words, the concept behind this blessing is to acknowledge that we're not owed anything. We don't have a sense of entitlement. You remember towards the beginning, we spoke about why gratitude is such a difficult thing, because people normally have a sense of entitlement. We expect things to happen. We expect the sun to rise. We expect the day to go smoothly. We expect things to fall into place. And when we realize that we should hope for things to fall into place, and we should pray for them, and we should hope and trust that it will be, but it's not that we deserve it necessarily, not that we owed anything, that's part of this ability to reach the concept of gratitude. And that's why the blessings language is, we bless God for bestowing good things upon those who are not necessarily worthy, right? Now, when is this blessing made? So, in Jewish law, we find four situations primarily when this blessing is supposed to be made. One is when someone comes out of jail. Someone, you know, it goes back in olden times where people are very often were just taken off the street unjust. We're not talking about proper criminals. We're talking about people just taken off the street by anti-Semitic regimes or whatever they call it, and just thrown into jail and then taken into captivity. And then one of the ways you thank God is those people who are released from captivity, released from incarceration, they make this blessing. The other is someone who was unwell, a chole, a sick person who became well, needs to be thankful and grateful. The third is someone who passes through a desert, travels through a desert in a sort of a dangerous situation, makes that blessing when they arrive safely. And the fourth is those that cross the sea, travel by sea, which is the modern application of that is going overseas even by plane, but you go over a sea, and see is potentially a dangerous situation. So therefore, when you come out safely, you are grateful, you don't take it for granted, and you make that blessing. Which in itself is an interesting thing because, again, you know, you get on a plane and you travel and we expect it, everything, we're surprised when things don't go well, right? And hopefully the pilot is trained, we hope. And, you know, I once said a good thing, just off the topic, I once said a question, why when someone goes for a doctor, like for an operation, you look for the best doctors, right? But you can trust your lives every time you go on a plane to a pilot you don't even know who it is, right? But the answer is very simple. When a doctor performs an operation, he's not performing an operation on himself, he's only doing it on you, right? So he doesn't stand to lose, so therefore you want the best doctor. The pilot, you hope, knows what he's doing because he needs to make it there safely too, right? Okay. So you assume that it's fine. But nevertheless, the idea is that we don't take it for granted, and therefore we make that blessing, we thank God. But I wanted to share with you an interesting thing, that on a deeper level, the Kabbalists explain an interesting idea, that these four situations where a person makes this blessing is not just because it happens to be four situations that a person is in potential danger, and therefore when they come out of danger, they have to make this blessing, but actually these four situations represent four strategies or four situations that a person, four mindsets that a person needs to be in order to be able to achieve gratitude. And the first is coming out of jail. In other words, the reason that a person cannot be grateful, the person that cannot see good, the person that just cannot notice the positive amongst the negative, the person who always sees black, a person who always sees bad, is that person which is trapped. And therefore, the deeper meaning behind this law is not that if someone comes out of jail, they have to make a blessing, but only someone who comes out of their own personal jail is able to make the blessing. In other words, only if you come out of jail, only if you release yourself from your own prison, are you able then to achieve gratitude. Because what stops us from achieving gratitude very often is that we remain stuck. We've spoken about this idea before, about being stuck. And being stuck is one of the greatest problems that stands in the way of any area of personal growth. That people just remain stuck. They remain where they are, right? The first ingredient, the first step, the first strategy that any human being needs to engage in if they want to achieve any level of growth is the commitment not to remain stuck, the commitment to go beyond myself, the commitment to be creative, to look at something from a different perspective. Right? So therefore, the first of the four strategies is this idea of not being stuck, going out of a jail. The second is the sick that becomes healthy. Now this is a complicated one because in Kabbalistic teachings, they talk about the idea of spiritual sickness. And spiritual sickness is the concept of wanting, of lacking, of desiring something that you don't have. That you're sick for something that you don't have. And it's based on a whole concept, which I'm not going to go into in great detail, but just to mention very briefly, that the word in Hebrew for sick is choleh. Chole is sick, right? The person who's sick is chole. And chole has the numerical value. You know, in Hebrew, every word has a numerical value. And chole has a numerical value of 49. And the number of completion, it says in Kabbalah that there are 50 gates of understanding that a person could possibly reach. It's like the 50 days that we count until we get to Shavuot. Moses reached the level of completion when he died at the year 50. So 49 is the one before completion, or the one where you don't feel complete, you feel like you're lacking something. And that could be in a positive sense, it could be in a negative sense. But in a negative sense, gratitude, again, one of the things that stand in the way of gratitude, as we talked about towards the beginning, is a person that always wants. The idea of having so many desires, you always feel you're missing something. And if you always feel you're missing something, you can't really achieve proper gratitude. And therefore, that's why the second ingredient, he says, someone who becomes well, that you have to cure yourself from this idea of always wanting. And that's the idea of the sick becoming healthy. And the third is the idea of midbar, the idea of desert. Once again, Kabbalistically, what's the concept of a desert? A desert is a place of emptiness. Right? One of the ways to achieve gratitude, to achieve the mindset of gratitude, and to be grateful for what we have and to see the positive, is when we live a life of purpose. Normally when we live a life of emptiness, that emptiness just brings the pursuit of materialism, the pursuit of empty pursuits, and therefore being unhappy and always wanting something and always not being uncomfortable and not being secure within oneself, again, that stands in the way of the feeling of gratitude. And finally, the concept of going into the sea, And the sea is the idea of turbulence. And once again, the Kabbalistic idea of the sea is the turbulence of life. In other words, we get so caught up in the pressures and what seems to be the race to survive the day, that again, we don't have time, we don't have the mind space, we don't have the head space to stop and to see that which is good and to be grateful for the blessings that we have. Think that life goes by so fast, so many challenges, so much turbulence, and therefore we're just trying to survive. And achieving gratitude really requires a person to take a step back and to have time to reflect and to notice those things which are good and to notice those blessings which God gives us. So therefore, I just wanted to share that with you, this concept of the blessing of thanksgiving, which you make for these four situations, but really the four situations represent the four strategies that a person needs in order to achieve gratefulness. So once again, it's that idea of becoming unstuck, being willing to see things differently than we saw them before, not having an overdose of desires, the idea of not pursuing emptiness, but by having meaning and purpose, and finally not getting caught up in the turbulence of life, but taking time off to reflect and to think about those blessings that God actually gives us. That's one point I just wanted to share with you, and I thought of that because, as I said, I just came back from overseas, and you make that blessing when you came overseas, so I thought I'd share that with you. The second thing I wanted to, before we get to today's topic, I wanted to just share with you one other thing, which is in connection with something I shared with you a few weeks ago, just because there was a continuation of the story, so to speak. We've been talking a lot about the ability to see good. Now, I've mentioned this once before, but I think it's a very important point. The ability to be positive, and which is really the basis and the foundation of gratitude, the ability to see that which is always good over that which is bad. People often grapple with that because they believe that to do that, you have to be a person that doesn't see bad. And there are people like that. You know, our people have rose-colored glasses and just nothing's bad, ever. Now, that's not what we're talking about. Because to achieve that, you have to be one of two people. You either have to be crazy or you have to be someone who's on a very, very, very high spiritual level, which is probably unattainable to most of us. I think I once told you the story of a great rabbi called Reb Zusha. You remember that story, right? So there was a guy, a disciple of the Maggid of Mizrich, who came to him and he says he doesn't understand how it says in the Talmud that you have to even bless God when there's tragedy, just like you bless God when there's happiness. He couldn't understand how that works, so the Maggid of Mizrich sent him to a great rabbi called Reb Zusha. And he came looking for Reb Zusha and he saw this poverty-stricken, starving individual who was obviously under the influence of lots of suffering, sitting in a shul and studying. And he said, "Are you Zusha?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Your teacher sent me to you to explain this passage." And he explained to him his question. And he says, "I think you've got the wrong address. Maybe it's a different Zusha." So he says, No. The teacher sent me to you to understand this passage of how you bless God in tragedy as you would in happiness." And he says, "I really can't answer the question because I never saw tragedy in my entire life." Right? So that's Reb Zusha. That was the lesson for that individual, but that's not attainable for most people. Right? Most people see tragedy and most people feel pain. So I think it's important to understand that when we talk about this idea of seeing only positive, we're not talking about the ability not to see negative. Right? Because we do see negative, and negative does happen, and we do have challenges, and people suffer losses, and people suffer challenges, and therefore And they feel the pain, but it's the ability that even when it happens to notice good and to come through and to actually grow from it and to see the positive. And the reason why I'm mentioning that is because a number of weeks ago I told you, a very, very painful story, but I told you about someone who was able to have gratitude even in the darkest of hours. And I was referring to the father of that boy who was murdered a year ago, Label Kletsky in Brooklyn, right? And I shared with you how he got up at the funeral and thanked God for the 8 years that he had his son, which is an amazing strength, right? So I just wanted to mention that again because there was a little bit of a continuation to that concept. And just a few weeks ago, two things happened. First of all, it was the first yahrzeit of that little boy. And secondly, they finally came to some level of closure where the guy that actually murdered the child finally pleaded guilty and avoided the pain of a long drawing trial, and that achieved some closure for the family. And on that occasion, the father wrote a statement on behalf of him and his wife to the media. I just wanted to read you some of it because it just shows this concept that it's not that a person was unable to see bad. We're talking about a person in a lot of pain and yet at the same time having the strength to achieve some level of gratitude, which is absolutely amazing. So I'll just read it, some of it to you. He says, he writes like this. He says, everything in the world is from God. Everything that happens is His will. We have challenges, but God gives us the strength to overcome these challenges. My wife Esther, our children and I all understand that our role in this life is to do good and to continue on even with greater strength. Listen to this. We have made it until now only with God's help. For that I thank God with all my heart. Then he goes on to say the following. There is no way one can comprehend or understand the pain of losing a child. Esther and I faced this unspeakable tragedy last year when our little boy was taken from us. Today my family has received some partial closure. Closure doesn't mean that we don't continue to feel the pain. A day doesn't pass without thinking of Levi. But today we close the door on one aspect of the tragedy and seek to remember only the gifts that God has bestowed, including the 9 years Levi was with us. May our son's soul rest in peace. And he goes on to explain, and the whole thing, he says everything is in God's hands. So you see, it's an incredible statement where it's very painful. He feels the pain and yet is able to thank God and be grateful for the gift. Now, of course, no one should ever know such tragedy. No one should ever experience such darkness. I only brought the story as an extreme example of someone that even in the darkest hour could actually achieve some level of gratitude. And the lesson for us, of course, is that even in a regular day where our challenges are insignificant compared to our challenges, but insignificant to the challenges he's talking about, the ability to see good and to identify the positive. Okay. That was just developing and sort of completing some of the stuff we spoke about till now. But what I wanted to do today is just talk about a whole different aspect of it, of gratitude. We spoke a few weeks ago about the importance of expressing gratitude, right? And so far we talked about the concept of gratitude and its benefits for the person who expresses gratitude. So seeing the positive, building a mindset of gratefulness, the idea of Moses not hitting the rivers we spoke about in the beginning. All of these concepts, even the idea of expressing gratitude, being there for the benefit of the person that expresses the benefit. Expresses that appreciation. But I wanted to touch on the other aspect of the other side of the coin, and that is the importance for the person to whom gratitude is expressed. And if we talk about gratitude, if we talk about the idea of showing appreciation, it's very important that as part of that process, as part of this discussion, we talk about the benefit to the person to whom we express gratitude to. If we say thank you for something, and why it becomes part of our responsibility. And let me share with you two thoughts. First of all, we need to have a consciousness and a mindset that throughout our life experience, we don't exist for ourselves. Right? We exist in a context of relationships. We know that the essence of human experience is relationships. God created us from the very beginning with the relationship. In fact, at the very beginning of Genesis, when Adam was alone, we have the famous verse where God says, it's not good for man to be alone or lonely. I will make him a helpmate. In other words, it's not good for man not to have a relationship. A person has to have relationships. And therefore, we live our lives in the context of all sorts of relationships. Friends, siblings, marriage, parents, students, employers, whatever the case is, right? And that's the way life goes. We don't live in isolation. But part of the concept of relationships is that relationships is the completion of the human being, and relationships is the completion of the human experience. But relationships also come with a responsibility, and part of the responsibility of relationships is that we have a responsibility not only to ourselves, but to whom that we to those whom we have a relationship with. And part of our responsibility is to support other people. Right? It's a responsibility of a human being to be a support for other human beings. And I just want to share with you that concept and then develop it to the context of gratitude. In that book I talked about a few weeks ago, Sarah Riegler's God Winked, there's a beautiful chapter there called I Am a Wall, in which she tells a story, a beautiful little story of one time when she took her family to a hiking outing. And the family likes hiking apparently. And they were... and they were climbing, and they went to a place where you got to climb mountains or cliffs which are quite steep and quite straight, which she wasn't able to do. So she parked the car and she left her 19-year-old daughter and a 13-year-old son to go and take this hike. Anyway, it took a long time and they still didn't come back, and where they hiked was out of range of any mobile phone. And of course, as a mother, her heart started to pump, and started to pump even harder when suddenly her youngest son appears without the daughter. So she jumps up and first he screams out, "Everything's okay." And then he qualifies his statement. He says, "Well, my sister, Pleo name is, not injured, but she's stuck. She's stuck on this steep sort of thing and she can't climb, just can't get it, and she's holding onto the ropes. I don't know exactly, I'm not very much of a hiker, but anyway, she's completely stuck and she doesn't know what to do. She can't go up, she can't go down, she's stuck." So she calls up, she gets the brochure out of the car, she calls the emergency hotline, which we're obviously very used to getting such frantic calls from nervous mothers, and they send for help. Suddenly one of the rangers, one of the guys appears. She's clutching her book of Tehillim, she's starting to pray very hard. She says, "What are you going to do?" He says, "Don't worry, we'll send for help, we'll get her out." She says, "Can I come with?" The guy says, no, you just stay here." And then he sees the book of Psalms in her hand and says to her, "You just keep praying," which wasn't very reassuring. Anyway, apparently what happens is they go, half an hour later, there's a van coming towards her son and her daughter in the car. Daughter's smiling, everything's fine. So she rushes to her daughter and she hugs her, as one would do, and says to her, "How did they get you out?" So she said, "They didn't get me out, I climbed." She says, "But you couldn't climb, you were stuck." So she explained what happened. She explained that when the guys, the mountaineers or the rangers came there, they took out the whole sense of apparatus, they took a whole stretcher, and they were going to get her onto a stretcher and then pull up the ropes and get out of the mountain. Again, I don't exactly understand the description. But then apparently what happened is one of the guys climbed up behind her and said to her one word. He said to her, "Ani chama, I'm your wall." Right? And as soon as she knew that if she slips, she'll fall not to the ground, but fall on the person, she suddenly had no problem and she climbed up the thing herself. And she used that story. She said, "Ani chama, I'm the wall." That the responsibility of a human being is to be a support, is to be a wall for other people. Right? And I think it's a beautiful idea. People often, you know, sometimes, it's a very, very important lesson for many, on many, many levels. You know, sometimes people find themselves in great situations of challenge. The best thing is just to be there for them, to support them, just to be a wall for them. Not always do we have to get involved, not always do we have to find, you know, often we don't know the right things to say, we don't know what to do. But it's the idea of being there and not worrying about making a mistake. Just being there for someone and supporting them. You know, there are many stories, and she tells a story as well, but there are many stories of people who suddenly were struck by tremendous difficulty or challenge or tragedy, whatever the case is, and suddenly realized that people very close to them, like very close friends, suddenly disappear. And sometimes the reason is not because they mean bad, but because they avoid them, that it's because they don't know what to say. You know, sometimes a good friend suddenly has a terrible problem, and you meet them and you don't know what you're going to say, and what should I say, and how should I say, so you avoid them completely. It's the worst thing you can do. Better to make a mistake, but to be there for the person, right? Just to be there, say, "I'm here for you, what can I do, how can I support you?" So that's just an introduction to this concept that in general, we need to be a wall for other people. When people feel that there are other people around as a wall, as a support, they're able to climb a lot higher than they could climb without that. In that context, we need to explore the whole idea of gratitude and expressing appreciation. So one level of gratitude is the concept we've been developing till now. It's for ourselves, to develop a mindset of gratitude, to see good, to see positive. But another side of the whole concept of gratitude is what the Talmud refers to as hakarat hatov, showing appreciation. And showing appreciation is not just a nice thing to do. Right? It's not just a nice thing to say thank you to someone or to point out to someone how they've impacted on you positively. Showing appreciation is actually an obligation. It is actually a need that the other person has. And I'm going to share with you something. Bear with me. It's a little bit of a long-winded thing, but let me share it with you. And it's based on a story in the Chumash. And what I'm going to share with you is based on an essay that was written by Lord Sacks, the chief rabbi of England. I need to give you the background to the story so you understand this idea and how important this is to give people positive feedback and to show appreciation. There's a story in the Chumash, one of the more unknown stories, right? You know, there's the more famous stories like Mount Sinai, the Ten Commandments, splitting of the Red Sea. And then there are those stories that sort of seem to be sort of details and not always known. This is one of the stories. This takes place a good year and a half almost after the Jews leave Egypt. And along the desert, along the journey of the desert, often, or sort of often, the Jews got into a grumpy mood and they started to complain, right? Nothing new. So, they come to Moses and they start complaining about the lack of meat. That's what happens. Which is not the first time they complained about food. They complained about food when they came out of Egypt. They got nervous. There was no food, no provisions. God sent, right? They complained. There was no water. They complained. There was no food. They complained. God responded each time. Moses handled it. Eventually, they got water from the miraculous well. They got manna from heaven. And they survived. Suddenly, a year and a half after they came out of Egypt, the manna got a bit boring. Because you have to understand, manna was like a white cracker that used to fall from heaven every day. Not a great source of food variety, although it had many tastes apparently, but you know, it didn't look like gourmet stuff. And they started to miss the meat. And once they got into a complaining mood, they came and they complained and they complained and they said to Moses, they cried and they said, who's going to give us meat? And then they said, you know, we remember the fish, they missed the sushi, I guess, from Egypt or something, that we ate in Egypt for free. The cucumbers, the melons, the leeks, the onions, the garlic, like what's going on here? You know, we remembered the variety of food. Not that they had a tremendous amount of food in Egypt, but something. And now all of a sudden, all you give us is this manna from heaven, right? Okay. So suddenly, so they complain, that's fine. Suddenly Moses goes to God and he responds in an incredible way. Like almost disproportionate, you'd imagine. Moses says to God, look, he says, why have you done bad to your servant? In other words, why have you pained me so much? What did I do to you? He says to God. He says, how can I carry the burden of these people? Did I conceive these people? Did I give birth to them? That they tell me, you know, I should carry them and I should give them meat. How am I going to have meat to give them? You know, how can I give such a big nation meat? He just completely, so to speak, loses it. And he wants to resign. Like he says, you know, forget it. Like, I can't do this anymore. He says, I'm not able to bear this alone. I can't take these people. If you do this to me, kill me. Rather, please, I don't want to see any more bad. Totally. We can't really say this because we're talking about Moses. But if it was a regular person, we'd say it was just a meltdown. A complete meltdown. Right? Okay. So what does God say to him? God says to him, listen, I'll tell you what you have to do. Gather 70 people. From the elders of the Jewish nation, 70 special people, take them near the Mishkan, the tabernacle. And what I'm going to do is, says God, I'm going to take from the Spirit, from the Holy Spirit that rests upon you, and I'm going to extend it and share it unto them, so to speak. I'm going to bestow upon them some of the Spirit that rests upon you, and they will become prophets, and they'll become like your assistants. Right? So he does that, takes them there. And suddenly an amazing thing happened. These 70 people suddenly become prophets. The spirit of prophecy rests upon them. And they start to prophesy. They start to speak words of God that have been given to them. And they prophesied all of that day. And then the verse says, "V'lo yasafu," and according to most of the commentaries that means, and they didn't continue. In other words, they prophesied for one day, and that was it. And then God brought meat and quails and everything, and it was fine. And then the next story, he was fine. Strange story. So we have a number of questions on the story. First of all, this is not the first time Jewish people complained. Like, come on. They complained for water when they came out of Egypt. They complained for food. They complained about other things. This was really not the first time. Why was Moses in crisis all of a sudden? What happened? Why suddenly did he go into this almost disproportionate response? And why did he say things like, how am I going to find meat to feed this nation? As if it's a problem. I mean, it was never a problem for God to send down manna and to feed 3 million people. If God wants it to be meat, he'll find a plan. If he doesn't want it to be meat, there won't be meat. Right? I mean, Moses is experienced enough to know that this is not the issue. The issue is not where we're going to find a butcher to provide meat for 3 million people. Right? There was enough miracles that had happened till then. But why did I do this to me? If you kill me, rather, I don't want to have this anymore. I didn't give birth to these people. I can't take it anymore. Second of all, that's the first question. Second of all, what was the solution to take 70 people and make them prophets? Gather 70 people, and God says, I'll take from the spirit that rests upon you and share it with them, and suddenly they'll be prophets, and they did it, and they prophesied. So what was that all about? So Rashi, the great commentator Rashi, says, well, on a simple level, that was a response God said to Moses, regarding that which you said that you cannot take, bear this alone, I'll give you help. Delegate. Nachmanides says something similar. Nachmanides says, well, maybe the purpose of the 70 people would be that in future when they complain, they won't all gang up on Moses. They'll have other people to complain to. There'll be more leaders so they can complain to them. And that's a commentary on the simple level of understanding the verses. The problem with it all is that it didn't happen quite that way. First of all, apparently they became prophets only for one day. Second of all, if we know the little stories of the Chumash, it's not the first time that Moses delegated. There was a very famous story when Moses' father-in-law came a year before that and noticed that Moses was doing it all alone, and he instituted and he advised Moses, a famous story of middle management, like to appoint leaders of hundreds, of thousands, in other words, a whole structure. It wasn't like there wasn't any help. So what was Moses' complaint? What was he in crisis for? And how did the solution of 70 people solve the problem? So I'm not sure which commentary he bases it on, but Rabbi Sacks writes the following idea. He says, what happened here was a completely different concept. Moses wasn't scared about providing meat for 3 million people. If God wished to do that, he'd send a miracle like all the other miracles. Moses' response was a whole different problem. And when we understand the problem, we'll understand God's response, and then we'll relate it back to our idea as well. Moses' problem was that he went into crisis because he was a nation that was really a year and a half after he'd taken out of Egypt. Now let's understand what this nation was, right? This was a nation that witnessed the 10 plagues in Egypt. This was a nation that witnessed the miracle of splitting the sea. This is a nation that stood at Mount Sinai and heard the word of God, right? These were the most spiritual, the uplifted nation, should have been. They saw the miracles. They got manna from heaven every day. They had a tabernacle. They served God. They were protected by the clouds of glory, which was a daily miracle. And Moses turns around, and after a year and a half of carrying this nation, of investing in this nation, of leading this nation and spiritually guiding them for so long, and what do they do? What is their desire? What do they turn around and ask for meat? That's the sum total of Moses' investment in this nation. And at that point, Moses turns around and he says, I've had it. And everything, I've carried this nation from day one. I've tried to lead them, I've tried to direct them, I've tried to invest in them. You'd imagine that after a year and a half, a little bit more refined, a little bit more spiritual. And this is it? This is what they come, this is the sum total of everything? They come and they beg for meat? That's all they can think of? So he says to God, I've done, I'm resigning. Obviously this isn't working. Everything that I've done is worthless. I understand when I took them out of Egypt, when they were a nation under the influence of so many years of slavery, and they just came out of slavery and they asked for food, I get it. They asked for water, I get it. They complain, they grumble, I understand that. But after a year and a half later, after giving of the Torah, Mount Sinai, after such spiritual uplifting experiences, and this is what they do, they just ask for meat. So he couldn't take it. He felt that whatever he had done had been completely wasted. To which God responds and says, you're making a mistake. I want to show you something. He says. God says to him, yes, they ask for meat. People have weaknesses. But if you think you've invested in a nation, you haven't achieved anything, you're very wrong. And to prove it to you, let me show you a sample of what is possible for this nation to achieve that they weren't able to achieve before. Take 70 people, gather them, and I'll show you I could turn them into prophets in 1 minute. And Maimonides talks about the whole concept of prophecy, which is one of the foundations of Jewish faith according to the Rambam. And Maharidi says that for a person to become a prophet, a person has to be on a very, very high level. A person has to be spiritually very, very uplifted to experience prophecy. And God says, look, take the 70 people and I'll show you they are worthy of prophecy. And they only have to prophesy for one day. And the Torah says they didn't prophesy further on because it wasn't necessary. It was necessary only for Moses to see that his efforts weren't in vain. That he had achieved. That what he had done and worked so hard with this nation had brought them to a level which was tremendous. Yes, people have weaknesses. Yes, people fail. Yes, people ask for meat maybe when they shouldn't have. But doesn't mean whatever you've done has been for naught. And so God turns to Moses and he says, gather the people, you'll see they prophesy, and Moses accepted. And you'll be able to carry it, the burden, God says, after you see that happen. They didn't help him again. They finished their job after that one day. Moses continued to lead, but he continued to lead with a whole new perspective. He continued to lead because he knew that he had accomplished. He knew, he got the feedback. And we see an amazing thing from here. We see an amazing idea. And the amazing idea is that even the greatest leader, the greatest person who you think does it only for the cause, and Moses absolutely did it only because God wanted him to, and does it because it's the right thing to do, but the nature of the human being, even the greatest human being, is that a person needs feedback. The nature, God's design of the human being is that when you accomplish and you do and you put in effort, you need feedback. You need to know that it's being appreciated. You need to know that it's accomplishing. Not for ego purposes, not for selfish reasons, but it's the nature of the human being. A human being cannot work for nothing. A person runs out of steam after a while. Even the greatest of the great runs out of steam if you work for nothing. And if Moses needs feedback, how much more so regular people need feedback? And if that's true, then we take on, when it comes to the whole idea of gratitude, as much as gratitude is important for ourselves to become positive people and to recognize good and to express gratitude when it's important for us to be filled with feelings of happiness and gratitude, but it's also, the other side of the coin is that it's also our responsibility to other people. We all have people in our lives that impact upon us. We all have people that have done things. It might be a teacher in grade 3 or who knows what. People currently or in the past who have a tremendous influence in our lives. Part of the lack of gratitude that exists is the inability to express that appreciation. Inability to tell people in a sincere way, not in a flattering, exaggerated way, but to tell people in a sincere way when they've had a positive influence on you. Excuse me, when someone gives you something, whether it's material or spiritual or emotional, whatever support a person gives you, whatever gift a person gives us, that idea of sharing gratitude, the idea of saying thank you is not just a nicety. It's not just being a mensch, it's not just being polite. It's that too. Being polite is a good thing. But it's much deeper than that. We have a responsibility to give people feedback. To give people so that people understand that what they put in bears fruit. That people understand, because what it does is when we share gratitude with each other, we motivate people to keep going. Even with God we have such a concept. You know, we have an idea called Hallel. Amazing thing. Every festival we say Hallel. And Hallel means it's praises that we sing to God on festival. On Sukkot we do it, on Shavuot, on Pesach. Right? And Hallel is comes from Psalms where we praise God, we sing songs of praise. And the Kabbalists explain the same idea, that when we praise God, so to speak, God blesses us. Now, God doesn't need our praises. But God created that model for us to learn from. That when you give someone positive feedback, when you point out the good that someone has done for you, it motivates them. It gives them feedback. It gives them a perspective. It makes them realize the contribution that they have. Because, you know, someone who's a sort of a business coach shared this with me lately. And he said that one of the things that comes up, apparently there's a whole study done with it. One of the things that comes up in business reviews, and people review businesses, and businesses go under review when they think they need to improve, which is a very good thing. People always need to improve. People always need to do better. And one of the things they found that when they do, you know, when they take a business and they do a whole review and evaluation of staff and of sales and of productivity, and, you know, everything that's going wrong and right in the business, One of the things they found is that businesses often fail to realize what they did achieve. Everyone knows, you know, it's easy to know what you're not achieving and what you have to still achieve, or sometimes people don't recognize their weaknesses. But if they are in the mode and the focus of review, it's easy then to pinpoint all the failings. But part of that process is also understanding and appreciating what you did achieve, what you did accomplish. And one of the things they found is that businesses often, when they're under review, actually haven't actually taken the time to actually pinpoint and identify and highlight what the successes of the business are. Because sometimes people need to be told, because they don't feel it themselves. You know, not right now we're in a month of the Jewish month of Elul, right? And Elul is the month preceding the new year, Rosh Hashanah. And in many sources, this month of Elul is called Chodesh HaCheshbon, the month of reckoning, the month of account, the month of reflection. And we are told that during this month, as we prepare for the new year, the idea is that we're supposed to reflect on the year gone by, and we're supposed to make an inventory. It's the month where we're supposed to really reflect and see where we're up to. You know, what are we doing? What are we accomplishing? And of course, part of that month is to understand what failings we had in the previous year and try to fix them in the coming year. But the sources that deal with this concept tell us that when a person reflects on the past year, it's critical that when you make a list, when you make an inventory of what you did wrong, it's also to make a list of what you did right. In other words, not only to know your weaknesses, but to know your strengths. Because knowing one's strengths and being aware of one's strengths is a driver, is a motivator to increase, to do more. Once you know you've accomplished, we're motivated and driven to do more. And where that relates to gratitude is because often people are not sure and are not fully aware of what they're accomplishing. And part of our responsibility of being a chama, of being a wall, a support to other people, is showing gratitude. Whether it's showing gratitude to someone who has an impact in our life, whether it's thanking a teacher of our children, whether it's just pointing out and saying thank you to people that do things that are good for us or have had a positive influence on us. Because when people have the positive feedback, even the greatest of the great suffer if they don't have that feedback and fail to realize what they've invested. How much more so simple people. And let me end with an interesting story on that note. It's a story that took place in 1903. It took place with a great Hasidic Rebbe called the Rebbe Rashab, Rav Shalom Dovber of Lubavitch. He was the fifth Lubavitcher Rebbe. A great Torah giant who established a yeshiva, a tremendous thinker, tzaddik. And he took a trip from the city of Lubavitch to Vienna. And he met with someone who later became the father of modern psychology. He met with Sigmund Freud, who at that time, in 1903... wasn't actually known as a top psychologist. He was known as a neurologist, actually. And in fact, the primary reason for the Rebbe Rashab traveling to Vienna to meet him was an issue with pain that he was suffering in his arm, and there was a new treatment, and he wanted to discuss it with him. But at the time, the story goes, because he related the story later to his son, who related later to the seventh Rebbe. At the time, the Rebbe Rashab was undergoing a process where he was suffering, it says, from the michat haruach. He was feeling a little bit down. And the reason he was feeling down is he expressed to his wife that he felt that after so many years of service, of serving God, and so many years of study and refining himself, he felt that he hadn't achieved what he wanted to achieve. Anyway, he spent a few weeks in Vienna, most of which is unknown to us, exactly the discussion that took place. But what he did relate a little bit, and it was fascinating to understand the conversation that took place between the two. So the two things that we know from the conversation is this, that in the discussions between him and Freud, they discussed the relationship between the mind and the heart. And the Hasidic Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab, explained to Freud that one of the foundations of Hasidic philosophy is the concept of the control that the brain has to have over the heart. And Freud, talking to the Rebbe, and discussing, he said he came to a conclusion that one of the problems that the Rebbe had was, he says, das Herz, he said in German, he told him that the heart cannot contain what the mind grasps. In other words, that the Rebbe had such an incredible mind and such a fast-moving mind that all that his mind had grasped was too much for the heart to contain, to actually absorb. And that was part of the disconnect between the mind and the heart, and that was causing him one of his issues. But then he told him that one of the advices that he gave him was that when he goes back to his city, he has to try, it was interesting advice, he has to try and get feedback from his disciples and from his Hasidim. Because he felt that part of the problem why he was feeling down was that he had invested so much into his Hasidim and his followers and his disciples, but for some reason he hadn't received the feedback back. In other words, he felt that perhaps he didn't fully appreciate what he'd actually achieved with them. And therefore he gave him this piece of advice to actually make sure that when he returns and he gets proper feedback from his followers. Another example of the same idea that we shared with Moses, that even the greatest leaders sometimes, the absence, the lack of feedback is a tremendous problem. And therefore, again, when it comes to us, that concept of making sure that we show gratitude, that we express gratitude, is so critically important. However, what we need to realize is that what comes together with that whole concept is the ability to receive gratitude. And I've mentioned this once before, that the way God designed the world is it's a world of give and take, mashpia and makabel, giving and receiving. And it's true that we say that our responsibility to other people is to support them and to give them. Some of the reasons sometimes why people don't give feedback is because people don't know how to take a compliment also. In other words, part of that responsibility of giving feedback is also to learn how to give, but it's also to learn how to take. Because giving and taking are both very, very important parts of the design of the universe. Not that we should be takers, not that we should be, everyone, no one wants to be a taker, no one wants to be a receiver. But the truth is, it's not true. We all need to receive. No one wants to be, want to be self-sufficient and independent, etc. But it cannot be to that extreme. The way relationships work is that there's giving and there's receiving. And just like we have to know how to give, we also have to know how to receive. We all need to receive. We all need support from other people. We all need feedback from other people. So part of our responsibility is to make sure we give feedback to others. But part of our responsibility to make that whole process easier is that when people give feedback to us, is knowing how to take it, knowing how to receive it. You know, I've told you this before, but so often, you know, you give someone a compliment, thank you very much, and they say, no, it wasn't, it was nothing, and, you know, that meal you just served was delicious. No, but it wasn't my best, you know, I really do much better normally, or, you know. Or, yeah, maybe it wasn't, but just say thank you anyway. Like, if they appreciate it, they appreciate it, you know. Or you look so good today. No, I don't really. I woke up on the wrong side, all this kind of stuff, right? But, and it was nothing, and you shouldn't have. You don't have to thank me, and please, you don't have to, you know. You know one of the famous lines people say, like someone gives you a little gift because you did something very nice then? So people say, oh, you shouldn't have. Why? What do you mean you shouldn't have? Okay, maybe it wasn't necessary. Maybe you didn't need to go to that degree. I'm not saying, again, people shouldn't be takers, but the point is not to be a taker. That's not the idea. The idea is to learn that sometimes people need to show appreciation. They need to show appreciation because you need the appreciation. We all need positive feedback. So don't make it difficult for them to do. It's hard enough for people to do for some reason. It's very hard enough for people to call up and say, I just want you to know that something you said yesterday really had an impact on me. Or I want you to know that really what you did, you might not have noticed it, but it really was really inspiring, or it was really good and you helped me, and you know, all that kind of stuff, right? So sometimes people find that very difficult to do. It's not easy to come out of yourself and to say, you know, to show your weakness, kind of, I really needed the help, or I was feeling very down that day, and you know, something you said to me really helped me. It's a difficult thing to do, but what we need to do is make it easy for people to do that, and when they do that, when they do give us the feedback, to receive it properly. So I just wanted to share that with you, because I thought that's an important part of the whole gratitude process, that it's not just for us, but it's a responsibility we have to other people to show gratitude and to give gratitude, to give them positive feedback, to motivate more positivity and more doing of good. So I just wanted to end off with one concept, that the one line that the Talmud tells us. It's a thing I just noticed a few weeks ago. The Talmud says the following, listen to this. That if a person greets another, right? The Talmud is discussing about the importance of greeting people. Another discussion. So it's an important thing, saying hello, saying a warm hello, saying good morning. But it says, if a person greets another, and the second person does not return the greeting, he's called a thief. Interesting thing. Why is it, in other words, all different types of thievery. You know, you can steal an object, you can steal time from someone, but you can also steal satisfaction from someone. If I greet someone warmly and they ignore me, they're not giving me the feedback. It says the Talmud, that's called thievery, that's called robbery. So we have a responsibility to other people to give that feedback. We owe it to them, so to speak. And not giving to them is a form of thievery. So that's just another side of the whole idea of gratitude. Before we finish up, I just wanted to mention, in the next few weeks, of course, we'll talk about some, we'll finish off by different aspects of gratitude to complete the subject. But just if you're able to make it tonight for men and women, there's a shiur lecture here at 8:15 on the concept of Israel. Is it really our land? Understanding the historic, biblical, and spiritual right to the Jewish ownership of the land of Israel. Have a wonderful week. 8:15.